My talk is about two adventures or experiments with the Voyager 1 spacecraft. Probably most of you are familiar with the Voyager mission. Two spacecraft was launched in the 70s and sent out to explore the outer planets and then continue the journey to interstellar space, becoming the most distant human-made objects. Here we are mostly interested in the telecommunications side of things, so we can see that from a huge distance we need large antennas to communicate, and Voyager has a 3.7 meter high gain dish antenna. It uses the X band at 8.4 gigahertz, and in the past it also used S band at 2.2 gigahertz. This is the rough mission timeline. The two spacecraft were launched in 1977, and in a couple of years they arrived at Jupiter. Then they continued to Saturn, and Voyager 2 continued on to Uranus and Neptune, while Voyager 1 escaped the solar system. In 1990, Voyager 1 made the famous solar system family portrait. This is a series of images of all the planets in the solar system, and is the origin of Carl Sagan's pale blue dot. Then they became the most distant objects and escaped into interstellar space, with Voyager 1 both being the fastest object going away from the solar system, as well as the most distant. It is hard to imagine how far these spacecraft are from Earth. In fact, if you search for maps online, most of them are not up to date or not to scale, so I made my own maps. The data here for the spacecraft is taken from JPL Horizons, and the planet orbits are generated using AstroPi. So maybe you can see here in the center in blue and red the orbits of Mars and the Earth. And here is the position today of Voyager 1. Here would be Voyager 2 today. And we can see the orbits, the outer planets. So we can see Voyager 1 being launched on the Earth, then flying by and doing gravity assist at Jupiter and Saturn and continuing out away from the solar system. And Voyager 2 swinging by Jupiter, Saturn, and also Uranus and Neptune. This is a view from the side, so we can see that Voyager 1 is traveling up north and Voyager 2 is traveling down south. In fact, Voyager 2 is so far south that it is only possible to receive it from the southern hemisphere, but Voyager 1 can be received from the northern hemisphere as well as from the southern hemisphere. The first adventure is detecting the Voyager 1 signal with the Allen Telescope Array. The Allen Telescope Array is an array of 42 6-meter dishes in Northern California. It was built with a generous donation from Paul Allen from Microsoft, and is devoted mainly to SETI search. So that's search for extraterrestrial intelligent life. In 2020, the GNU Radio community and SETI Institute partnered, and as part of this partnership, a few people from the GNU Radio community have had telescope observation time at the Allen Telescope Array, and that is an amazing opportunity to do experiments. These are three dishes from the array. In fact, this one in the middle, 4G, is one of the dishes we use to detect Voyager 1, but here is conducting a different observation. It's observing a quasar. Here is another view of the array where we can see most of the antennas. They are scattered at seemingly random positions over distances of a few hundred meters. The GNU Radio hardware at ATA looks like this. So the frequency coverage of the telescope is between 0.5 and 14 gigahertz. The antennas have dual linear polarization, so that's vertical and horizontal. We have two USRP N321 and 20 set up with LO sharing, so all the system is phase coherent and is synchronized to the time and frequency reference from the observatory. The telescope signal processing chain sends approximately 700 instantaneous bandwidth to the USRP, so we can select any 700 MHz window between 0.5 and 14 GHz to observe. We received the two polarizations from the same antenna in each USRP, so we can look at two antennas simultaneously, and there's a switch matrix where we can select from many of the antennas in the array. Everything runs on an Intel server, which is connected with 40 gigabit Ethernet to the USRPs. To detect a very weak signal like the Voyager 1, we need to do as follows. So firstly, remark is that NASA DSN needs a 70 meter or 234 meter dishes array to receive data from Voyager 1. Here we are not looking forward to receiving the data just to detecting the weak signal. But we have 6 meter dishes at ATA. So this is more than 20 dBs less gain than a 70 meter dish. Well, that's a factor of 10 out of 100, sorry, if you wish. So we need to do some signal processing to detect the signal. Fortunately, the spacecraft signal has a residual carrier. That's a CW tone, which we will see as a peak in the spectrum. So we can use a very fine FFT resolution and integrate for sufficiently long time to detect this tone. It is very important for us to correct for Doppler drift, which is mainly due to the rotation of Earth, because otherwise all that signal power will not be aligned in the same FFT beam, and so we will not be able to detect anything. The observation was done on 2020 in November. The distance of Voyager 1 from Earth was approximately 152 astronomical units, and the time to observe was chosen so that the spacecraft was high in the sky, between 40 and 60 degrees. We used two antennas, 1A and 4G, having what we call the old feeds. These are feeds which are not so performant at the high frequencies as the newer feeds which are being installed over the last few years. But then, nevertheless, they work quite well at 8.4 GHz. We did four 30-minute scans or observations of Voyager 1, and we interleave those with 5-minute scans of a nearby quasar. The idea to record data of a quasar was as a calibration target to perform beamforming of the two antennas in case we needed or wanted to do so to detect the signal. However, it wasn't necessary to do beamform because we were able to detect the signal separately in each of the two antennas. And in fact, we never did the beamforming experiment. So if any one of you is interested in doing this beamforming, just tell me, I can give you access to the whole data for you to perform it. The spacecraft frequency is 8420 MHz, but there are approximately minus 700 kHz of Doppler on top of that, and that depends on the time of the year you observe because of the rotation of the Earth around the Sun. So we recorded taking that 700 kHz Doppler into account, and we use 960 kHz bandwidth. That's much more than needed, and the reason why we did that was because we were not so certain on the correct frequency to observe. All the recording was done using GNU Radio. The post-processing of the recording was done in a Jupyter notebook using NumPy and Dask. Dask is a Python package which can be used to process matrices which are too large to fit into RAM, so Dask will bring the data in and out of RAM as needed. The ephemeris from Voyager 1 were obtained from JPL Horizons using AstroQuery. This is based on some code by Nick Foster, who did some signal processing of some ATA recordings with the ATA beamformer done in 2010. The steps we do are the following. We first remove the DC spike in the middle of the recording. We normalize the power on each channel by computing the average power over all of the recording and dividing by it. This is done because each of the four channels has a slightly different gain in the electronics. Then we need to form the LHCP and RHCP circular polarizations using the linear polarizations we have. And for that, we need to know the phase offset between the two polarizations channels, and this was measured and calibrated using Tianwen-1, the Chinese spacecraft on Mars, which was recorded earlier on that day. Next, we need to calculate the Doppler, and we do that with very good precision. So the ephemeris from horizons are fetched with 8.6 second steps, and then we linearly interpolate those to 10 millisecond steps. We compute the corresponding carrier phase for those steps, and then finally interpolate the carrier phase to each sample. Using that, we can correct our signal for the Doppler drift. And then we can do an arrow FFT with a band, with a resolution of approximately 0.5 Hz. And finally, we integrate non-coherently the power in each of the FFT bins. We do that for each of the four scans. This is how the Doppler correction looks like. And it's in fact a part of a sine curve, or approximately a sine curve. So there is some curvature to it. And that's the reason why doing some careful interpolation is important. This is what we obtain after integrating all the power in all the four recordings. We can see here the LHCP signal. So the Voyager signal is LHCP and can be seen here and there in each of the two antennas. And in the RHCP, we do not see the Voyager signal. If we want to do some proper statistics on the noise floor, we need to correct for this bandpass shape. So we feed a low order polynomial to the bandpass, and we correct. And this is what we obtain. So now the noise floor is completely flat, and we can see the Voyager 1 signal here and here. However, when we are detecting any kind of signal, we need to ask ourselves if we are confident that what we're seeing is the correct signal. Because, for example, here we also see a peak, and this is most likely just random noise. So in order to be sure of what we're looking at, we do some statistical analysis using the noise variance. We can compute the significant level in standard deviation units, and adding up the power of the two antennas, we have 30.